Cairo, Seattle.
It's time to get schooled with a professor, John Clayton.
Welcome to Schooled with a Professor. You know, it's getting towards summertime, and of course, time to map out some plans for what you might want to do as far as vacation and, you know, going someplace. And we got a great one to talk about because, you know, you got the Pro Football Hall of Fame that's going to be coming up in August. And of course, you got a football game there. You got Kevin Mawai that's going to be there. And joining us here on Schooled is going to be the Chief of Staff for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, Pete Fearley. And Pete, let's kind of go through all the things, because not only is this a special year for a Seattle player and fans in the fact that Kevin Mawai is going to go in, but also it's a special year for the Hall of Fame. You know, it's going to be 100 years in the National Football League, and there's so many things that we can go over as far as what's going to be available. But first, let's start talking about, you know, Kevin Mawai and what fans can do in being able to kind of be with him on his induction into the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Well, it's great to be with you, John. And let me start first by thanking you, because without the dedication of our selection committee, members like yourself, 48-member selection committee who work year-round, I'm not sure every fan understands what goes into being elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And it is something incredibly special. And you especially put so much energy and time and dedication into this year after year after year. And a lot of the discussion that happens on Selection Saturday, as you know, the day before the Super Bowl, about a 10-hour meeting, we lock you in a room, we don't let you out until you name the new class. But it's really hard to get into the Hall of Fame. And a lot of that discussion focuses on who didn't get in, and what it really means is it's extraordinarily difficult to make it to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And allow me to put that into perspective a little bit, because it is a life-changing event when David Baker, our president, at 6'9", 400 pounds, and if your listeners have not seen it, they should go on and see the video that went viral when he knocked on Kevin Mawai's door to let him know that he's going to Canton. And Kevin broke down crying, because what he realizes is that there's been about 300 million men and now even women who are playing this game. Only 5 million have ever made it to the college level. Since the NFL was formed here in Canton, Ohio, nearly 100 years ago, there's only been 29,000 who have ever been paid to play it, to coach it, or administer it. And as of August, there's only 326 with a bronze bust. And I think that's what really hits home, is to be at that upper pinnacle of this sport. And that's what hit home pretty hard for Kevin Mawai. And it all comes to a head in TriMet Week, which is powered by Johnson Controls, as we kick off the NFL season every year. And this year, it'll be special because we kick off the NFL's 100th season. But as you know, because you come back year after year to Canton, it is a celebration that continues to grow in scope, and it is something that bookends the season. We kick it off here in Canton, and it wraps up with the Super Bowl at the other end of the season. But it is a wonderful celebration of the game that happens here in Canton.
I know that you kind of helped me out during the meeting when we had it on the eve of the Super Bowl, is that because I'm usually the one that, I mean, usually some people ask, okay, how many of the, when you get into the 15, how many make it in? And you tweeted out, I think at that time it was 91-92%. And then, of course, that didn't include some of the ones who have been there before. But if you make the 15, that's why it's so tough. Basically, you're pretty much a Hall of Famer. The problem is only 5 of the 15 can get in each year. And so then you have guys that move backwards, and you have to wait some time and wait and wait and wait. But still, ultimately, if you make the 15, you have a great chance of getting in.
You really do. And it is a case in most cases. It's a matter of when, not if. And it's a very difficult process, and we want it to be, because it is what we consider the highest and most prestigious honor in all of sports, and it ought to be difficult to get in. And as painful as it is for those who don't get that knock on the door, when it finally happens, it is something that is life-changing. And Kevin Mawai had to wait a few years to get in, and when he finally got that knock on the door, all those memories of getting the phone call saying this was not your year, those go away, and you suddenly realize what it is. And it is something that is so special for us to see, because it doesn't matter if you're Brett Favre, and as you know, the debate on Brett Favre, I think, lasted 9 seconds. Brett Favre knew he was getting that knock on the door, yet he had the same respect for what that honor means as somebody like Jerry Kramer, who last year got in after waiting 45 years. And so it is something that is so very special, and that's why if your listeners have never been, to Enshrinement Week, they ought to make that trip. It's a bucket list item to come to Canton, Ohio, because on stage behind Kevin and the seven other members of the class of 2019 will be about 130 Hall of Famers. It's a who's who dressed in their gold jackets. And it is just something that's chilling if you're a football fan. But, you know, those of us who love sports love when you're part of history. And that's why I think this year more than ever will be a great opportunity to be part of history, kicking off the NFL's 100th season in the city where it all began. So, you know, there's tickets available. You can go to our website, profootballhof.com. There are ticket packages, travel packages to come. You know, we have fans who come from all over the country to be here. But it's a really a two-week celebration in Canton. But we really focus on Thursday through Sunday right on the Hall of Fame's campus. We kick off the NFL season. We'll have the Broncos and Falcons playing in the Hall of Fame game. The next night, we have the Gold Jacket Dinner in our Civic Center, attended by 4,500 people. It's nationally televised. There's a parade that is among one of the biggest parades in the country. About 300,000 people line the streets as the parade takes its route from where the NFL was founded up to the Hall of Fame. And, of course, the enshrinement that night on Saturday, August 3rd, is something pretty special as each of the members step to the podium and share their thoughts on what this honor means. And you've seen so many speeches, John, over the years, but it's amazing how infrequently they talk about themselves, but they sure talk an awful lot about all the people who helped them get to Canton. And then we'll wrap up everything with a great concert. We have Imagine Dragons playing, and we have a wonderful new stadium here that's a big component of what we're creating is Johnson Controls Hall of Fame Village. That'll be a massive kind of Disneyland for football. But this stadium is not only great for a football game, but it's great for a concert as well, as a permanent built-in stage where the enshrinement concert take place. And it's a wonderful, wonderful venue.
And there are tickets available. You can still get there if you're going to be a fan.
Yes, you can, and we have those available on our website at profootballhof.com. There's a lot of varieties. In fact, we just announced we have a special package, the 100th season package, where you can get for $100, you can get tickets to the game, the enshrinement, into the hall, and we also have a commemorative T-shirt that you get part of that. But there's just so many different things that happen here, and, you know, I see how hard you work when you come to Canton, John, so what you don't see is how much fun all the fans are having, because our whole campus is tented, as you see, and in those tents are fan parties featuring our Hall of Famers, where you're rubbing elbows with some of the greatest in the game, and there's just so much activity going on here to kick off the season. It is just something that, even if you've watched the enshrinement on TV, there's nothing like being in the stadium and seeing what it happens and all the atmosphere that's going in around it.
Well, talk about the change with the stadium and how that's grown, and also what's grown around it, because there have been so many projects that are now at the stage of being completed. Kind of take us now, what has grown since you've been working at the Hall of Fame as far as just what's available?
Yeah, it's been, you know, I've been here 30 years, and it's amazing to see how much the hall has grown itself. We are actually an accredited museum, 118,000 square feet. And what an accredited museum means is it's about a 4-year process that you go through to apply for this. And it's very tough guidelines by the American Alliance of Museums. And only 3% of museums across the country earn this accreditation. We are the only major sports museum to do so. And it means that we take care of our collection to the same standards as the Smithsonian or any other major museum. And when guests come through, the fans walk through the hall, they're only seeing about 10% of our collection. The rest is cared for in our archives by our curatorial staff. And so that in itself has really grown to a new level of excellence. But more so is we've launched what's called Johnson Controls Hall of Fame Village. We're done with the first phase, which was Tom Benson Hall of Fame Stadium, and 5 of 8, what will be 8 fields at our National Youth Football and Sports Complex. But what we're building is what we call the most inspiring place on earth. And the Pro Football Hall of Fame is really driven by our mission, which is quite simply, it's to honor the heroes of the game. And that's nothing to do with hero worship. It's everything to do with focusing on some values that make some people pretty extraordinary in what they do. It's about preserving its history, and I talked about us being an accredited museum, about promoting the values that this game teaches and celebrating excellence, not just on the football field, but everywhere. And so at the core of everything we do at the Hall, at the core of everything we do with Johnson Controls Hall of Fame Village, are the values that we think that this game can teach to inspire people. So we call ourselves the most inspiring place on earth, and we focus on a lot of values and lessons that the game teaches. But five core values that we focus on are commitment, integrity, courage, respect, and excellence. And those are values that not only earn someone a bronze bust in Canton, Ohio, but those are the same values that make you a great journalist like yourself, or a great business person, or a great violinist in the symphony, a great community, and inspires us really to live what we call a Hall of Fame life. So we're taking our message, we're taking this brand to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. We do events across the country and across the world. Last year alone, we had over 700 appearances by our Hall of Famers, really talking about those values and how they can inspire people to be impacted by the lessons we can learn from the game. And so that's really what we're doing. That's the core of all of what our vision is for the future.
Using Kevin Mawai as the example, can you take us through from the time that he's been, then Dave Baker knocks on the door and tells him that his life has changed, and what happens after that? How many different trips does a Kevin and a Hall of Famer get to go back to Canton before getting enshrined?
Yeah, so it really starts, you know, and it's interesting because it's a whirlwind, and I think it's as much as we try to prepare them ahead of time, I'm not sure they quite get it. And then it really takes off from the time David Baker knocked on Kevin's door. And again, I'll encourage your listeners, even if they've seen it, go back and watch it again, because you can tell how much this honor means to Kevin. And what we do is we give him about 15 minutes to compose himself. Then we got him on a shuttle over to NFL Honors, where he was introduced on national television as a member of the class of 2019. We then followed up with a very large press conference that follows immediately afterwards. The next day, we have them at the Super Bowl, and they're introduced during the first quarter. And then on Monday, we have what's called Measurement Monday. And that's kind of our first initial orientation, where David Baker, other members of the staff, really explain what the process will be like, because it's a whirlwind from that day forward to August. But what we also do on Measurement Monday is Kevin got measured for his Hall of Fame gold jacket, for his bronze bust, and for his Hall of Fame ring of excellence. Then what happened about a month or two later, he came out to Canton and he actually got to tour the hall and then sit down and really go over in more detail with the staff everything that'll take place, planning it, all his guests and friends and family that are going to be coming back here to Canton to help celebrate with him. We get him prepared, and we have a staff here that works endlessly to make that an incredible experience for him. We have nearly 5,000 volunteers, that some who take a couple weeks vacation just to volunteer during Enshrinement Week. And then we get him here in August, and it'll be a whirlwind. And so it's been really, I think, a great experience for Kevin. And last week he was kind enough to donate over 200 artifacts and documents from his career and his life to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And so we will preserve that forever. So Kevin's, you know, three generations from now, they can come back and learn about not only who Kevin Mawai was as a football player, but who he was as a person.
Talk a little bit about this class. What did the Hall like about what we voted for in this particular class?
I think it's a special class, and every year, you know, one of the funny things, John, and maybe you get asked the same question, is when people always ask me, who do you think's going to make it in the class, I don't even give that answer anymore, because I'm always kind of surprised how it all turns out. And you're in that, I sit in that meeting, and as you know, we're not allowed to say anything. The Hall just runs the meeting. But it's really what I am most impressed about, and I wish fans get a little sneak peek as what goes on in that room, but they would be really, really, really surprised by the hundreds of hours of time and preparation that's put in by our selection committee. And the debate is not just talking about stats. I mean, it is talking about interviews of players, coaches, personnel. The amount of information that is shared in that room to come up with the class always amazes me. But, you know, this year is really it's a special class, because it's the first time ever in our history that we have an entire secondary being enshrined. So you have, you know, you have Champ Bailey and his wonderful career. You also have Ty Law, Ed Reed, and then you have Johnny Robinson, the great AFL star. And so that was great to see. You know, we have a senior in Johnny Robinson, somebody who, for various reasons, slipped through the cracks, but the process never forgets about someone like that. And then you have, you know, Ty Law's been waiting a couple of years, Ed Reed getting in his first year of eligibility, as well as Champ Bailey. That's a pretty special mix. You have two contributors who are someone other than a player or a coach, and that was Pat Bowlen, who I think Broncos fans are just absolutely thrilled. He's somebody whose name, he's been right on the cusp of earning this honor, and I think the entire Bowlen family, the entire Bronco nation is really, really excited about Pat Bowlen getting in, because Pat not only did some great things for the city of Denver and the state of Colorado in turning the Broncos into a championship team and maintaining that excellence for so long, but he had such an impact on the National Football League as a whole from especially what he's done related to television. So he's earning his rightful place. You have someone like Gil Brandt, who has an incredible resume, perhaps more unique than any other person in the hall, that he, really kind of revolutionized the whole scouting process in the NFL. But Gil, after his days with the Cowboys did not end, he's been, he is still involved in the NFL over 50 years, and what he brings to the popularity and helping raise the popularity of the game. Tony Gonzalez, a great tight end. I think there was a slam dunk in this class. You'd have to think it was Tony Gonzalez, but I think you'd also admit, John, that there's no slam dunks as much as fans want to think there are. And then, of course, Kevin Mawai. It's been the last couple of years, and there's some other pretty good linemen that were all being discussed. And I think it's really special to have Kevin in and to hear the argument that was made on behalf of his legend or his legacy that he's left on the game.
Now, this is going to be a special year in the sense that this is the NFL's 100th year, and so there's going to be some more things that the Hall of Fame is going to be doing.
Yeah, so it's kicking off the NFL's 100th season, and it'll be pretty special because this is the start of what will be a year-round celebration. And then what it'll come around to is it'll all wrap up on September 17th, 2020, which will mark the actual centennial of the founding of the National Football League here in Canton, Ohio. And we are working right now. We have a group of civic leaders leading the Centennial Host Committee, and we have some plans that we're working on with the National Football League that we'll think we'll be able to celebrate that day in a huge, huge way right here in Canton, because quite frankly, I don't think there's anywhere else you could celebrate the centennial of the founding of the NFL than where it took place right here in Canton. So we're working on that. We think it'll be an incredibly special day, perhaps the greatest day in the history of the NFL is what we hope.
Well, one thing that's going to be in addition to that is that, and this kind of goes back in history, because of the 100th year, there's going to be 17 additional Hall of Famers that are going to be voted on. And again, every year there's eight at the current rate. We have eight that go in, five active players that are not seniors and not contributors and not coaches or anything of that nature. But there's eight going in. Talk about what's going to be 17 and why 17.
Well, that is not finalized yet, John, but we are talking about doing something pretty special for the centennial and having a centennial class. And one of the concepts was to go with concept of having 17, because the initial class of the Pro Football Hall of Fame back in 1963 was 17, and it included 11 players, and then it had coaches and contributors as well and owners to bring that up to 17. So I thought it would be a symbolic tie to that, but there are some various other thoughts on how we would do that. But the idea of having a centennial class is really a way, and I don't think I have time on today's show to really talk about why it happened, but over time, there's so many candidates that were deserving that quite frankly never ended up in that room to be discussed as a finalist. And so this would be an opportunity, and it's one of the reasons why we have the senior category, and that's for a player who finished his career more than 25 years ago. And so it's somebody like Johnny Robinson or somebody like last year where Jerry Kramer and Robert Brazil who have never really been in that room to be discussed. And there's so many deserving candidates. So this could be a time where we could honor many of those greats who helped build this game. And as we focus on the centennial, we will not only cap the 100th season celebration that's happening this season, but it's really not only to honor the history in the past, but to kick off the future. And the future could not happen if it hadn't been built on the shoulders of all these great legends.
See, and that of course, gets into it. When you talk about the fact that 63 class was the first one, you think about that. I mean, here it is that you have 100 years in the league, and it's been playing catch-up for the longest time. I know being on the contributor committee, you know, we had the fortune of being able to have that committee to catch up to some of the people who have meant so much to the game that are going up against players and yet usually losing to players. And so, you know, we're always playing catch-up. That's why the senior class is always you know, such an interesting meeting, because there's such a big length of players that's not in there. Same thing that we face with the 15 that we try to put in, and with only five allowed each year. We're always playing catch-up, but the mission is to get these guys in.
Absolutely. And you know, in the very simple way to describe why that happened is, you know, the hall opened in 1963. So in the first few years, you were able to go back and look at some of those players and that helped build the game. And then pretty much what happened is that all of a sudden then you start getting into the modern era. And I think looked over were some of the players in the 50s, 60s, and even into the 70s. But suddenly now you had more of the modern players who were being considered for the class. So that's why there is this backlog. And the really interesting thing is if you take a look at all of the candidates for the senior category, it's pretty intense. And there's not, I think there's not a person you discuss that does not at least receive serious consideration to being enshrined in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So it's something that I think is frustrating sometimes for you and your fellow selectors, is because it's pretty easy for fans to criticize what you do, but then all you have to do is turn around and say, okay, you have 15 modern era candidates and you can only pick five. Who are the 10 you don't pick? And suddenly you put that on to somebody and it makes it pretty hard. So I don't always envy the task that you have, but I can tell you the integrity of our selection process, I think, is without a doubt the finest in all of sports. And it's something that I think is very special, because it is something that all of our 48 selectors take so seriously. They work year-round at this. And then I think what is also great is the several cutdowns that happen in the process. But then the idea that everybody comes together on the eve of the Super Bowl for Selection Saturday, and you're there face-to-face having the selection meeting, I think the process is great. It's a difficult process, no doubt. But as I said at the beginning of the show, getting into the Pro Football Hall of Fame should not be easy. It should be difficult.
Hey, Pete, thank you so much for doing this. And, of course, it's all the beginning of August. You want to be there for the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio, and I'll be looking forward to seeing you then.
Thank you, John, and thank you for all you do for not only the game, but for the Pro Football Hall of Fame specifically.
And that does it for this week's podcast. In between episodes, you can follow me on Twitter at ClaytonESPN. If you enjoy these weekly one-on-one conversations, consider leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to the show. Thanks for listening. See you next time on Schooled with a Professor.